accepted it, it ends up being the end of the year's spending.
Okay. Our break is over. I'll call the committee meeting to order. Ms. Thomas, would you call the roll again, please?
Chair.
Continue.
Richard McDonald. Richard Brinkley.
Present.
Richard Roddy.
Present.
Richard Davidson.
Here.
Vice Chair Milton.
Present.
Richard Nichols.
Present.
Richard Spiller.
Present.
Richard Thomas, present. Secretary West. Richard Thornfield.
Present.
Regents present.
That region present.
Representative.
Represents quorum. Correct. Our first item under Academic Affairs Committee is action item number one. Mr. Provost.
Yes, sir.
If you will present that for us, please, sir.
Yes, sir. It's approval for academic program suspension of the Russian and East European Studies minor. And today we have with us Terrence Brown, Dean, and Senior Associate Dean Merle Price. If you have questions, it was the faculty made the choice to take and suspend this interdisciplinary program. Want to give them just an idea why?
Yeah. The certificate was on the books, and we've not had success in enrollment in the program in an attempt to start to lean out the curriculum to make sure resources are used effectively, decided this was the next step.
In addition, we have lost an important faculty member who was part of the program, and in replacing that position, we're going to go in a slightly different direction, and we no longer have the kind of expertise that allows us to offer the program to its fullest extent.
Does anyone have any questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the suspension of Russian and Eastern European Studies minor with implementation in the fall of 2023. Have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. The second item is the approval of an undergraduate certificate in teaching English to speakers of other languages.
Don't move yet.
It's long again.
I would say that this is the only undergraduate certificate in TESOL that occurs in Kentucky at this point. It's to teach our own students how to be able to teach English to what would be international students, and it's incredibly important for us to be able to do that, and for students to be able to do that.
Yeah, we've taken several steps within our college to not neglect our international population that we continue to see increase within the Commonwealth, but more specifically within Bowling Green and Warren County, such as the GO school, as we see in South Warren High School. We see a steady influx of those students come in, and this certificate we think would be a good way to make sure our students are equipped to be able to educate students with different nationalities.
What do we have, about 56 different languages spoken in our undergraduate, in our high schools and grade schools now, at this time?
I actually think it's more than that. It's over 100 now.
Is it? I'm behind, but at least it's a bunch.
How many languages do we teach here?
Right now we have Russian, Chinese, we're closing out the Arabic program,
Spanish,
and we also have now reconstituted German with one class for this fall.
And Japanese.
Russian, Chinese, Spanish.
German,
and Japanese.
And
American.
Oh.
And American.
And
American Sign Language. That's right.
I was curious, and I'm looking for him to ask the question.
this involves pedagogy. Can you talk about the conversations you had with the College of Education centering this in liberal arts college and the strategy behind that?
Well, this is historic. We've historically had a graduate certificate in TESOL, which has been run through the English department. And this has given the opportunity not only for our students to be able to teach the whole new diversity that's happening in Warren County, but it also gives them multiple opportunities to study abroad, and many of them take advantage of that. As a result, we haven't had a lot of connection with Corinne's College in terms of teaching that, but certainly we're open to that.
Not to contradict you at all, Mara, but actually we have a long partnership between the School of Teacher Education and the Modern Languages programs related to TESOL and adding the language endorsement for our students. Actually, some of our elementary ed programs have that language. English is the second language as part of that program, and so we've been graduating folks and certifying them with that endorsement for a number of years now. And we continue to work with our school district partners on the importance of the secondary language challenges for our learners within the schools. This certificate is great, though, because it extends beyond educator licensure and actually goes into the workplace and the workforce. And so as our community continues to welcome families into our region and those families go to work with our partner businesses, those partner businesses will have the opportunity to send some of their employees to us to take this new certificate program to learn how to work with their employees who have English as a second language. So we're excited and very supportive of the extended partnership.
And I spoke of this as occurring through the English department, but of course, one of our TESOL faculty is also the chair of the Modern Languages department, so it's broad and it's interdisciplinary.
And there's been also some other conversations Sunny Guard about some funding to be able to support this.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I entertain a motion to establish an undergraduate certificate in teaching English to speakers of other languages with implementation in the fall of 2023. So moved. Have a motion to have a second.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion carries. The third item is an undergraduate certificate in strategies, trauma-informed approaches to improving resilience.
So it's a certificate to provide students with the knowledge and skills to effectively provide services in a way that support resilience in people who have had trauma. And what we would like to talk is bring Dean Bostoff and
she's already behind me, Gail.
So good morning. We'd like to discuss STAIR, as we're calling it. It's an undergraduate certificate, really, that is going to help and educate the individuals on how to work with those who have experienced some sort of trauma. Sorry, for those who have experienced some sort of trauma, and as I think all of us are aware, following the COVID pandemic, the tornadoes that hit here, most of us have experienced some level of trauma, but obviously there are those that have experienced much higher levels. And so Dr. Malinger brought this to my attention, and we definitely agreed it was a great idea. It was confirmed by Hanover Research that we should move forward with it.
The idea for the certificate really came because we have a course in understanding trauma that was very well attended by students across the university. And they were asking for more courses, similar courses to this. So that's when I approached Dr. Bostoff about this certificate program that was kind of student that we found for Hanover, that there's a tremendous opportunity for our students who would be certified in terms of having that extra piece to be employed. So it seemed like a good idea. We developed a course on intergenerational trauma, and to combine those two courses and understanding trauma, intergenerational trauma, with our human behavior and social environment course, which is a lifespan development course. So there's three core courses. We're adding electives across the university so if a person is a criminology major, they might be interested in taking a crim course as one of their electives, education, public health, et cetera. And then there's a capstone course, a one-credit capstone course for students who then develop a portfolio so that they have an ability to show that they have integrated the knowledge to the certificate. Any questions?
Any questions or comments?
So I would say I've been on with CPE a few times in the last couple of months, and this has been the types of certificates that are most needed in this state. Any certificate that brings these extra healthcare types of assignments to people who are graduating and they're asking for, as well as certificates that people can go back and take and really add on to their career and make their career, create a different career trajectory. So this has been really important. And the numbers that are out there, there are very few of them, and there's a lot of opportunity for growth. So I think it's great.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I would entertain a motion to establish an undergraduate certificate in strategies for trauma-informed approaches to improving resilience with implementation in the fall of 2023. So, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Action item number four is the approval of an undergraduate certificate in professional and technical writing.
So I'm excited about this. I think anytime we have students learning how to write, but really writing towards what would be their applied fields, is an excellent way for them to move forward into the future. So I will let these guys explain.
Modern College is here again.
It is.
Very good.
Yeah, but this certificate has been in the works for quite a bit. I want to commend the chair, Allison Langdon, also senior associate dean, Merrill Price, and the faculty for being innovative to come up with this type of certificate. Undergraduate certificates, 15 credit hours, strong focus, and the digital literacy component. Also, this certificate would be a wonderful addition to prepare students to write for purpose in industry, and we think it will be a great addition to our students.
And is what all industry is asking for out there, is this ability. And I would also say that as you look at higher education certificates like this, they can be within an area, as well as standalones, are really how I think higher education will go in some ways, which is where you have on-ramps and off-ramps where you can get certificates that will help you move forward in your career.
And also this one is stackable.
Yeah.
Stackable. Any questions or comments? If not, I would entertain a motion to establish an undergraduate certificate in professional and technical writing with implementation in the fall of 2023.
So
have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion carries. Next is the approval of emeritus status to Dr. Steve Wells.
Yeah, just a little bit about Dr. Wells. He joined WKU as the chair of the Department of Accounting in 2008, where he served for 8 years. Beginning in 2016, he served as the director of the Master of Accounting's program until his retirement in 2022. He was also the person responsible for the accounting jump program that is one of the successful programs on this campus.
I would also add he led the accounting CSB accreditation. Because I co-wrote that with him. But yes, that was quite a humbling task for him.
Very good. And I would entertain a motion to approve emeritus status to Dr. Steve Wells. Have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Opposed, no. The motion carries. There is an information item.
I wanted to talk a little bit about, we've talked about Gilman Scholars before, but I want to talk about them again. I think as we, as an institution and programs get better and we think about applied, and applied means lots of things, not only undergrad research, but internships, job shadowing. One of the other applieds that I think really changes a person's life is the ability to go study abroad. I think people come, or students come back more prepared, more mature, and are ready to attack their classes and whatever the future has to hold for them. And one way for a group to do that is they always need money. And Gilman Scholars is a classic way to be able to get money from what would be a national scholarship. And when you look at it, in this last round, we had 48 applicants that work with the Office of Scholar and Development. 42% of them got a scholarship. The average in the country at a university is about 24%. So we're almost double of that, and that's an incredible thing to say. What you should also know is that this is for Pell-eligible students, which means these are students that would almost never have an opportunity to do this, now have an opportunity to go study abroad and enrich their lives. And that's really, really important to people. What you also see is that 60% of the scholarships went to students of color and 40% went to underrepresented minority students. Additionally, we had three students win extra awards there that are associated with the Gilman. And to give you some context, and it's my favorite because it always makes me smile when I go to bed, is WKU had 20 of them, UK had 3, and U of L had 1. So I feel much better about my life.
Me too.
And I would say all the kudos go to Lindsay Houshins and Will Randolph, who are the people who are the direct line for these students. They spend significant amounts of time with these students to prepare these applications, and they have certainly figured out what's the secret sauce, and we have been incredibly productive with that. And then you add the fact that we had a Goldwater, one of only 3 in the state this year. I think we're moving in a great direction, and I think it says a lot about the quality of programs, the quality of faculty, and the quality of staff on this campus.
That's a great information item.
I love that. I will say that post-COVID, we are re-ramping up our efforts to help young people think about study away and study abroad. It's important opportunities for our faculty, and it's also important for our young people. So this is one way we support that, but also through our international office. So international is not just about recruiting students to go here. Perhaps more importantly, it's about helping our students go abroad. And I want every one of our students to at least consider it. And you know, if we can get to 30% doing it, that's a true, true feat.
I appreciate the comments, because I was where my question was going to go was post-COVID. My son, when he was here, did Arlington. It was life-changing for him. And just hoping that we can get that everything back to him. Some level of where we were before.
So the numbers I have seen coming up are within one standard deviation of what they were pre-COVID. So we're quickly getting back to that range. I mean, it was one of the toughest decisions I ever made here was to tell students that they couldn't go to study abroad because I believe it does change their lives. But when I'm looking at countries that are foreign, it says do not travel. I really don't have a choice in that regard. And, you know, I mean, it's just going to take some time. But I think with Lindsay and Will and that whole GLIA group over there, I think there's a huge upside, and I only expect there to be more and more. I think we'll be way past that. So
what does GLIA stand for?
Global Learning
and International Affairs.
Yeah. Sorry.
I just saw a look of confusion on several faces, including mine.
I think all of us who've had a child that has been involved in the study in a study abroad program have seen the difference that it's made in that child. It's just amazing turnaround a lot of times as far as their whole approach to life and the world in general.
And the mention of Harlaxton reminds me that I want to publicly reiterate our commitment to WKU in England. They are our partners in University of Evanston. It's a great partnership. The tuition for those who are admitted to Harlaxton, the tuition you would pay here covers your tuition there,
with
the scholarship. And I'm really proud. And our goal is to have us return to being the number one partner with them in that. Again, we're incredibly challenged during COVID, but rebuilding that, rearticulating our commitment to it is important. And it is an interesting place. I went to SUNY early in my tenure as president to see it firsthand. And for a good portion of our students, it is a terrific toe in the water of international travel. It is safe. It is not in a major metropolitan area. It is cloistered, in a manner, and so they get the ability to travel abroad, but do it in a way that will feel comfortable, and then learn about England and the region with faculty on every Friday. And it's just a tremendous opportunity for students. Many of our students have not just never left the country, many have not left the region. So glad to have that available. I think creating an opportunity for the regents to see that firsthand would be great, too.
Do you have anything else, Mr. Fisher?
I'm good.
If not, I believe that concludes it. I'm sorry.
Oh, very quickly. I have had the ability to spend a week at Harlaxton, and as part of we were doing some promotional video stuff a few years ago, and I can echo what our president is saying. I think that, and I have said this, and I don't know how we do it, but I think study abroad should be compulsory. I cannot think of a better experience for students that do want to put their toe in the water. Harlaxton, as a parent of college-age students, I think that it is completely safe. It is a wonderful atmosphere, and an atmosphere that really promotes a type of learning that is extremely valuable. So I would echo that, and the commitment to Harlaxton I'm glad to see is moving forward.
So I would say one more thing about putting your toe in the water. I think there's another program on this campus that's underutilized, and we're going to start pushing it, which is National Student Exchange. You can pay what it costs to come here and go to one of 185 institutions in America and Canada. And I would claim that a student who's never left Kentucky spending a semester in California is in a different country. And I think as you look at this and we talk about those kinds of things, I think sometimes it's hard to get parents to think about them going across the ocean, but going to California would be that first step to lead to that, and we're going to spend some time in the next year or so getting them there. There's a lot of good institutions on this. I mean, an example would be the politics has just started, right, for the next. It would be great if you're a political science major to go to the University of New Hampshire, because you would get a chance to see everybody come through, and you get a chance to see things you would never see but only read about here. So we're going to start working on that, too, because I think that's another great way to put your toe into the water.
Very good. We'll move on to the Finance and Budget Committee. Mr. Brody?
Yes, first we have the approval of faculty and staff personnel actions, which have been approved through the administrative channels and executed the Human Resources Information System during the period March 1st, 2023 to April 30th, 2023, and one-time compensation payments executed through the payroll system covering the period March 1st, 2023.
So, Regent Brody, I don't have anything specific to add. These are pretty standard The only thing is that because of the timing of the last couple of board meetings, we're off as far as a little bit of the timing. So the final 2 months, May and June, will have to come to the August board meeting for approval, because with this meeting being on the 2nd of June, we didn't have time to run the reports. So, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve the faculty and staff personnel actions.
So moved.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Second item we have is a request to approve the 2023-2024 internal audit work plan. Mr. Bruce Wiseman.
Thank you, Regent Brody. Good morning, everyone. Got some slides to pull up here, but in your packet you have a proposed internal audit work plan for fiscal year 2024. And I just want to give you a couple of highlights on that item. Under the category of planned projects, we have 5 risk-based projects. Those stemmed from the conversations I shared with you all last board meeting, where I did a risk assessment and talked with 30 leaders across the university, did some surveys to get their perspective of the highest risk items at the university. Additionally, you'll see there's 2 annual projects. One of those is required by the president's contract. The other is required by Kentucky state law, so we have to do those. And then finally, there's 2 management requests. Those came in from leadership and said, hey, can you please come take a look at some of our process and procedures in this particular area? You'll also see on your pie chart, it's on the second page, we have 13% of the office's time budgeted for what I call contingent time. Those are for things that I can't foresee, management can't foresee, things that are just going to pop up. The best example I have for one of those is if a hotline call would come through and require a significant time to investigate on our behalf. That's not something we can plan for. I can't put it on the audit plan, but I've got time reserved to do that. If one of those things doesn't happen, we've got backup projects listed on the audit plan. There's 2 of them there, so if we have time available, we'll just jump right in and work on those. At a high level, I'll come back to the pie chart. We've got 63% of our time allocated for projects, another 19% for department management. I'll talk about some of those details of what we're planning to do with that department time in my quarterly update. And then the other 18% is just, rather than putting a whole bunch of pie slices up there for you to try and decipher, it's hotline administration, annual risk assessment. They're all listed down below there, but that's what that makes up. So with that said, I'll take any questions you all have about the proposed internal audit work plan for next year.
Any questions or comments?
I have a question about the hotline usage.
Yes.
One of the things that occurs when you promote the hotline is the hotline gets used. And that is a good thing. I want to get a sense of, but sometimes folks use that hotline in ways that are, it's not necessarily inappropriate, but in a targeted way to attack people.
Sure.
Have you seen any of that recently, or have a sense of what those kinds of requests are? Because what I want to make sure is not happening is the folks are seeing an opportunity to target folks.
Yes, absolutely. That's always a risk of any hotline. There's a limited amount you can do about it.
Right.
I will tell you, when I spoke at the staff senate on May 3rd, one of the points of discussion was to let people know the hotline existed. The second part was what kind of things should be reported to the hotline, including what sort of things should not be reported to the hotline. Some of that water cooler talk, targeting, that sort of thing. So we do some training to let people know what should and should not be reported. Additionally, we've got, since January, we have 3 hotline cases. Two are done. One is in process and is very near completion, but I would say all 3 of those were maybe lower risk items, things that weren't that wouldn't need to come to the hotline. But again, we welcome those calls, and we can investigate those quickly.
Just so I think we're all familiar, can you talk about what would rise to the hotline level and what might go to the channels?
I would say anytime you suspect fraud, if people are stealing time or stealing money, inappropriate use of university assets, definitely report those. We can look into those. And then anything that's just unethical, you know, we always say do the right thing. But if there are people doing the wrong thing or you think they're doing the wrong thing, report it, and we can investigate the facts and circumstances and the GDPR.
Okay. But things that come that would not be, some examples of that.
One of my favorite examples is coworker A was late today. They were 15 minutes late. If coworker A is 15 minutes late every day for many weeks, then we might have something that you want to report to the hotline. But people being late, personnel issues, there are other reporting avenues for discrimination, retaliation, things with EEO. There's a great website. I believe it's WKU/reporting. Don't quote me on that one. You can Google search it. But you can report it through the hotline that I run for ethics complaints. You can. There's a link there for EEO complaints and various other reporting options.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve the 2023-24 internal audit work plan.
So moved.
So moved.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you.
There is information item.
I've got an information item. Thank you very much. Before I jump into my prepared remarks, with all the talk of Harlaxton, I feel like I should let everyone know I'm a Harlaxton alumni. I'm a Purple Ace from the University of Evansville and spent a week at Harlaxton and can echo everyone else's comments. So. All right, so this is a quarterly update that I usually give to you all. We're going to talk about projects, the hotline, which we already touched on, some other updates, and then looking ahead. So first, project updates. We haven't done any since the last time we met. However, we've started one with undergraduate admissions. Big thank you to Dr. Ethan Logan and his team. They've been very responsive. I appreciate their effort and cooperation so far. So thank you very much. All right, on the hotline, we touched on that. Three cases so far this year, and basically three cases done. No additional information to report on that. Sorry, my clicker's got a delay. We're going to get there. All right, other updates. All right, so some of the big news in my world is we've hired a senior internal auditor. Her name is Caitlin Durham. She's going to start on Monday. She's a WKU alumni. She was here and she majored in finance and economics and then stuck around and got her master's in applied economics. So she's got a great skill set to bring to the internal audit profession. Since that time, she's got 10 years plus of work experience in internal audit, some in banking and some in the retail grocery business. So we're going to be bringing her up to speed on the higher ed industry, but I'm really excited about what Caitlin can bring to our department and to the university. With that, a big thank you to the search and screen committee that helped me through that process. That's just part of the hiring process here, so just wanted to call them out. We've continued our campus awareness. Does this thing work? Or we're good. There we go. Campus awareness. We presented at the staff senate meeting on May 3rd. We talked a little bit about what is internal audit, what do we do, what are controls, why are they important. We talked about the hotline. I thought the discussion went fairly well and was an educational experience for all. And I look forward to doing more of those down the road. This last bullet point is one I want to draw your attention to. I just call them consultations. I haven't found a better word for them yet, but I feel like it's pretty good. I define a consultation as someone at the university has reached out to me and said, hey, Bruce, this is what's going on. Can you help us do this? Maybe it's we're putting a new policy together. Can you provide some feedback? We'd love your your thoughts on that, or we want to change a process, or hey, we think this is a risk, what do we need to do about it? Since our April meeting, I've had two people reach out to me. Sounds kind of small, but I've only been here for 5 months, so I'm taking this as a big win that people know I'm here, they know who I am, and most importantly, they're comfortable reaching out and saying, hey, what do you think about these things? This is a key metric that I'm going to track, and I'm going to report to you all, just to let you know how the relationship is going between internal audit and the rest of campus. I view this as a very positive sign, and look for this number to grow. Consultations aren't big projects. You're never going to see them on the audit plan. They're part of that department management time. I get a call, and someone says, hey, let's talk through this, and it might only take 30 minutes of time. I'm not going to track a lot of detail, but I want to track how many of those we have. So that's a good thing. All right, looking ahead, another part of that department budget time that I'm going to be spending my time working on next year is there's a lot of letters here, so hang with me through the alphabet soup, but it's a quality assurance and improvement program. And that is a requirement of internal audit functions that's stipulated by the Institute of Internal Auditors and Professional Standards. So if you have an audit function, you should have one of these. And basically, it helps make sure that you are constantly reviewing your own performance as an auditor and saying, are we doing the things we should be doing? Are we getting stakeholder feedback to see that the stakeholders are happy with what we're doing? So we're going to be putting that plan into place. And as part of that QAIP, there is a QAR, a quality assurance review. And that's nothing fancy other than it's an auditor auditing the audit shop. So what I'm targeting is next summer, bringing in an outside group of auditors to audit my department, audit internal audit here at Western Kentucky, to see if we conform with the Institute of Internal Auditors Professional Standards. So, the standards require that happen every 5 years. Our last one happened in 2019. So my math's right. I got till next summer to get that one done. So that's the plan coming up on that. We're going to continue increasing campus awareness. When faculty come back, I'm going to try and get in front of them in the hall. That's on my radar. I've been talking with Regent Spiller about making that happen, so we'll keep working on that. Looking ahead, some more professional development. I think professional development is very important. It helps you stay up to date with what's going on in the world and with what's going on in the industry, higher education audit industry specifically. So Caitlin and I, we're going to be headed to the Kentucky College and University Auditors meeting. We're going to network with the other internal auditors from the other schools next week to see what kind of best practices they have, how we can do things better here. And then in the fall, we're planning to attend the Association for College and University Auditors, the ACUA conference. Again, that's just more of a national conference with a bunch of other schools. I've been a member of that organization for 13 years, and I can say it's been the most valuable resource that I've had as an auditor, of being able to network with others, learn from their experiences, learn from their mistakes, and implement best practices here at Western. And then finally, team development. Like I said, Caitlin's going to be here on Monday. We're going to spend time training, getting her up to speed, solidifying our processes. So far, it's just been me, so I can kind of do it however I like, but we're going to get her up to speed starting next week. And then we're also looking for a student intern. So we've got that posted out on the university's website. It's Handshake. If you know anybody that would be a good fit, please send them our way. They don't have to be an accounting major. They don't have to be business major. If you're a good thinker and or you're good with data, you can find data, you can look at data, whatever it might be, I want to talk to you. Might be a good fit for our team. So that's my quarterly update for you all. I'll take any questions you may have.
Good work.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Next item on the agenda is the Student Affairs Committee.